Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
And welcome back to Newsline PM. Thanks for hooking up and hanging with me here on this Tuesday afternoon. I appreciate that. So the Muppets were about ready to enter into a relationship with this fast food joint, Chick-fil-A. There are no Chick-fil-A's around here, so I have no idea what it's like as a fast food joint. But apparently they're a big deal in the parts of the country where they are located. Anyway, so there was this deal that was cooking up between Jim Henson's Creature Shop, and there were going to be these customized puppet toys from Henson's company in some of the kids' meals that are sold by Chick-fil-A. And, this is a pretty big deal, I would imagine. So what happened was that Jim Henson Company found out that the owner of Chick-fil-A had talked to the Baptist Press recently, and this is an Atlanta-based business. So, and he said that, when it comes to supporting marriage equality, no. Standing by biblical family values, yes. And Henson Company said, you know what? The Jim Henson Company embraces diversity and inclusiveness. And as far as Chick-fil-A is concerned, we don't want to partner up with them on this or any other future endeavor. So they've pulled the plug on that, which I think, has left Chick-fil-A kind of red-faced. And now all of a sudden they're going, well, this is something political, and we're going to refrain from proactively engaging in the subject. Well, you've also already proactively engaged there, pal. Lucas Grindley is the news director for The Advocate, joins me here on Newsline PM. How you doing, Lucas?
I'm good, thanks.
So this has got to be heartening when an organization like the Henson Company takes a hardline stand and says, you know what, if you're going to display that level of bigotry and prejudice and you're willing to discriminate and fight against this, then we don't want anything to do with you. That's got to be it's certainly surprising. When you look 20 years ago, it wouldn't have happened.
That's true. I think this is one of the things that LGBT people look for, is who is on their side in things like this when stuff happens. Everyone says that the free market, you shouldn't maybe necessarily be penalized for your beliefs. They're arguing, Chick-fil-A is arguing that they're a company, they're going to stay out of politics. But when the president of the company says that they're against marriage equality and then is making donations in the millions of dollars to anti-gay groups, then people can react to that. And I think that's what the Henson Company is doing, and that's what a lot of LGBT customers are doing.
Have you previously ever eaten at one of these joints?
I have. I'm from Florida, so we have loads of Chick-fil-A.
Okay, so because honestly, I have no idea what Chick-fil-A is. Tell me what
it is. Fast food chicken. It's all chicken. And it is actually very delicious, and the waffle fries are addictive, and I ate there for lunch for many years and don't eat there anymore, in part because I'm a vegetarian, but many things have changed.
See, because, like I say, I have no sense of how big a fast food chain this is, since it is based in the South. I've never seen one of these places and have never eaten at them. Do you see the business side of society moving more openly toward support, particularly for marriage equality?
There's no question that it is, yeah. Chick-fil-A is actually one of the very, very few companies that I can think of that have, that's why it's gotten such big headlines, that has an open position against marriage equality, or that comes out in anti-gay in any way. JCPenney, for example, just wanted to hire Ellen DeGeneres as its spokesman and got a huge brushback from the right wing because Ellen DeGeneres is a lesbian, and they said that people shouldn't have lesbian spokesmen. That's not part of their traditional values. And JCPenney said, no, we're going to stick with Ellen DeGeneres. Google, EA, the video game company, Starbucks have all come out against the Defense of Marriage Act in court filings, saying that it hurts their business. And the list of companies that the right wing would have to boycott because they are pro-gay is very long.
Well, and you know, I'm sure you're aware of the fact that here in Washington State, there was a marriage equality law passed by the legislature, signed by the governor, now going through the referendum process as people try to, you know, quelch that. And Microsoft, Boeing, I mean, a lot of the big companies here came out in favor of this, including Costco and Starbucks, as you mentioned. And we have a very conservative minister here who was going to try to boycott Starbucks. And when I was talking to him on my show, I said, well, why don't you try to boycott Microsoft? You know, because
good luck with that.
Yeah, I was good because you know all the computer programs you'd have to give up. It's easy to give up a latte if you're really committed to this. Go ahead and boycott Microsoft. But I find that, and I you know when you mentioned the JCPenney stand that it took, I think that's becoming more prevalent. There are more companies who are willing to stand forward and say, you know what, this is how we roll. This is how we think. This is what we believe. And that's going to be incorporated into our business model. And we're not going to succumb to pressure from groups that want to have us deviate from what we think is doing the right thing.
Minnesota is a really good example because they have on their ballot in November a decision on whether or not to ban all forms of marriage equality there. And big companies like Reuters, which has 8,000 employees in the state, have come out and said that they are against the ballot initiative. Target, which is based in Minnesota, had a big pushback years ago because they were donating to anti-gay candidates and have since said that they're just staying out of all marriage equality things. They had such a pushback on that. And have since actually they started selling LGBT pride shirts in their stores. They have marriage equality cards for couples that are getting married. So they're coming out in other ways to show their support and just trying to stay out of the debate in the political terms because you can have such drastic consequences to your positions now.
See, and that's I have to wonder sometimes if you stick a wet finger up in the air to gauge which way the wind is blowing. If the decisions by some of these companies, certainly not all of them, but the decisions made by some of these companies are more reflective of the business decision as opposed to the commitment to civil rights for people, or are the two mixed?
It's hard to know people's motivations, but I wouldn't be surprised if a business was acting in its financial interests.
I don't think
that would be a surprise to anyone. What's interesting is
The only reason I ask that, Lucas, is that if the wind begins to shift, then if public support for marriage equality, for example, begins to wane, then you have these businesses who really were never truly committed to the issue but were really just kind of looking out for themselves, then they're going to change positions again. That's the only reason I brought that up.
I mean, you could see that happening if the position did change that way, but I think the trends and all the polling shows that the younger generations support it by vastly more than older generations. So it's only going to become more of on the side of marriage equality as people get older, more voters get older. So I think you won't see the trend moving in the other direction. I think that's why companies feel safe coming out the way that they have.
All right. Lucas Grindley, news director for The Advocate. Appreciate the time, and thank you for filling us in with things. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Good talking with you. Let me put this out there to you because I, you know, on a personal basis, just and whether on either side of the issue, are you committed to boycotting businesses who A, support marriage equality, or B, disapprove of marriage equality? So depending on which side of the issue you're on, do you see boycott as a viable tool in this issue? 206-421-1000. And 877-397-COMO if you want to call us toll-free.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So here's the deal. Jim Henson Company signs up with Chick-fil-A, which is this fast food place that's, I guess it's a chain that's pretty much confined to the southern part of the United States. So they enter into this thing where Jim Henson is going to put together these puppet toys, you know, these Muppet-based looking toys for Chick-fil-A. Until the head of Chick-fil-A starts, you know, writing checks to anti-gay organizations and coming out in opposition to marriage equality. And then the Henson Company writes them back and says, you know, we've celebrated and embraced diversity of inclusiveness, and we've notified Chick-fil-A that we do not wish to partner with them on any future endeavors. 206-421-1000 is the local line. The toll-free number for you is 877-397-COMO. That's 877-397-5666. And the question that I'm asking, I think there's more power in respect to companies making decisions like this than perhaps individuals. Because I think it's extremely difficult to mobilize a large, considerably big number of people to boycott. But what I want to ask you is, on a personal basis, have you ever or would you consider boycotting a department store chain or, you know, something of some significance, boycotting them because of a political position that they have taken or a position on a social issue? So if you are opposed to marriage equality, and, for example, you know that Starbucks is in favor of marriage equality, do you not go to Starbucks? Or conversely, if you are in favor of marriage equality and you know that Starbucks is, do you go out of your way to patronize that store? Or if you find out a store is opposed to marriage equality, do you stay away from it? It doesn't make any difference, I think, which side of the issue you come down on. It's the question of whether or not your personal integrity, view, whatever, moves you to take action in a definitive way. That you're not going to shop at this store, you're not going to buy this particular product. For example, I know that, you know, as we talked with the guy from The Advocate there, I know that JCPenney faced a lot of fallout for the decision to continue having Ellen DeGeneres as one of its spokespeople. I know that there was a effort put together by a national religious group to try to boycott JCPenney, and I think it fizzled. I don't think it went anywhere. 206-421-1000-877-397-COMO. We'll start off with Maxwell in Tacoma. You're up on Newsline PM.
Yeah, I've boycotted the NBA. I haven't watched a single game or gone into a Starbucks since Schultz, that whole Sonics debacle.
Oh, because of the Sonics leaving town. So, given the fact that your boycott has produced, I don't mean this unkindly, hasn't done diddly doodly, do you feel, satisfied that you're doing this, or do you feel it's kind of like whistling in the wind?
Well, you know, I got to do something, and my mom taught me when I was a child that the only power you really have with the business is the power of your dollar. All I can do is what I can do. I tell people to boycott Starbucks, and like at Christmas time, times like that, I ask people not to get me anything from Starbucks. I love coffee, and to find a quality alternative is sometimes difficult.
Boy, that's really interesting, Maxwell. Thank you, Brett. I appreciate that. You know what reminds me? I'll tell you this story very quickly. Years ago, Roberto Maestas, who used to be the head of El Centro de la Raza, and before that, just a very active community organizer, was talking to me, and they were boycotting Krugerrands from South Africa in opposition to apartheid. And I said, oh, come on, man. I said, that the effort, the futility of what you're doing. And he said, no, it's not futile. It'll have results. And you know what? It caught on. It did. And I was wrong, and he was right. Gary and Everett. Whoop, wrong button. You're up, Gary. Go.
Hey, Ken, I listen to you for days in and days out, and I don't agree with you half the time, but I still come back and listen to you. So.
You know why? Because you agree with me the other half of the time.
sometimes I see your viewpoint. I don't necessarily agree. We're separated by a lot, but I still enjoy your comments and stuff like that.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate that.
You're
welcome. Keep coming back, man. Hang with us here. Newsline PM continues.
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
1968, the Gun Control Act was passed, which outlawed interstate sales of guns and ammunitions to unlicensed people. The motivation for that was the assassination of John Kennedy, because the rifle that Oswald used was purchased through the mail. Well, instead of mail order, we now have internet. And there are some real serious looks being taken right now coming out of the Colorado shootings as to whether or not online sales of ammunition in particular should be regulated. We're talking about that in just a moment.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
So with the shooting at that theater in Colorado last week, a lot more attention being paid to online sales of guns and bullets. And, you know, I'll preface this by saying, I know that the suspect in the Colorado shooting case, I know that he purchased the guns legally, that he went through the proper channels. But the question is, are those channels too lax? When you're able to purchase a high-capacity drum magazine like he did, which holds up to 100 rounds, I mean, there's been a bill in Congress that just can't get anywhere. It's been stalled, that would put a ban on magazines that hold over 10 rounds. Now, why that is stalled is beyond me, because my common sense tells me that that's enough. A 100-round magazine, please, there is absolutely no legitimate use for that whatsoever. Brian Malti is with the Brady Center. He's the Director of Legislation and Mobilization. Joins me here this afternoon. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me.
So how do we pick this up and move forward to bring more attention to the need to create some tougher laws regarding gun sales and ammunition sales, particularly online?
Well, first off, let's just say that there are way too many of these massacres, and, you know, 86 people die every day from gun violence. And, you know, enough is enough. If not now, then when? How many more times do we need to go through this? With that in mind, I mean, the American public has to say enough is enough. And that's why we've created a petition campaign at wearebetterthanthis.org. We need to engage the American public, and the American public needs to say enough is enough.
So what are you asking the American public to say enough to?
Well, we're saying enough to this gun violence and that there are solutions out there, and we're calling on the presidential candidates to show leadership and have a conversation about what should be done, rather than say nothing can be done, nothing should be done. Sympathy and condolences are perfectly appropriate, but now we need action. You know, most Americans think we have all these gun laws on the books at the federal level, and the fact is we don't. And when they find out that we don't, they're shocked. The fact that you can go into gun shows and online sales and buy guns and military-style weapons and a 100-round magazine, sometimes no questions asked at a gun show or online. And, you know, when they find out about that, they get very upset.
So let's focus in on private sales then, which would obviously then include, well, I don't know if it would include the internet, but I would imagine it would.
It would.
Okay.
It would. You know, here's part of what we want. I mean, for instance, you know, a background check on every gun sold in this country, no matter where it's sold. I mean, that's just for starters. And I think most people, most listeners would probably think, don't we have that already? Well, we don't.
We have it for handguns, but we don't have it for some rifles.
No, I mean, we don't have – you can go and buy virtually any type of gun that you want at a gun show in most places in this country, and it can be a military-style weapon that the shooter in Colorado used, and it could be a 100-round drum with no questions asked, no ID. I mean, that's how easy it is.
Okay, but let me back up a moment, because if you were to walk into a gun store, when Holmes purchased that AR-15 – he had to go through a background check.
Right.
But that's because he purchased it at a gun store.
That's correct.
Now, the private sales, and I try to drive this home because there are some gun shows that don't – I think the gun show loophole is too vague a description of what we're talking about. I think the specific nature of this issue are private gun sales. Not necessarily the gun show sales, but private gun sales. Now, gun shows can have private gun sales, but not every gun show allows everybody in. So there's some, I think, some need for clarity there.
Well, I mean, there may be specific rules in Washington State, but by and large across the country, In the vast majority of states that haven't acted on their own, you can go to a gun show, buy a gun online, to go to a flea market, or do a person-to-person transaction. No paperwork required, cash and carry, no questions asked.
I was amazed when I went online the other day, just, you know, to see what the situation really was like. And the availability of those military-style assault weapons, the AR-15s that, you know, Holmes purchased, it's like this plethora. They are so easily obtainable. And so that would be one area that I would think people would be willing to say, all right, look, we need to restrict the sale of those types of weapons, period. We need to restrict the 100-round magazines, period. But what else are you recommending when you say the presidential candidates need to get involved? What do you want to hear from Barack Obama and Mitt Romney?
Well, first of all, to be honest with you, we'd like them to start talking about solutions. We'd like them to talk about what can be done, enter into a dialogue and a conversation. And those will include things like banning assault weapons. That'll include things like universal background checks. That'll include licensing gun owners. When people find out how weak the gun laws are, they just get very upset. But we'd like a discussion of this, not just to say, oh, there's nothing, you know, throw up our hands and there's nothing we can do. Or, you know, we need to move past sympathy into action. We work with a lot of gun violence victims and survivors around the country. They're going, how many more times do people have to go through this? We need more than sympathy. We need action. And if you're not going to act now, when? This is unacceptable.
So let me ask you, is there any way for or any common ground that the Brady Center can find with gun rights advocates? Because this becomes such a hot political potato. Is there any way to find those common areas where there are elements of agreement and you sit down and reasonable people can reach, you know, worthwhile conclusions even while disagreeing in fundamental issues elsewhere? Why hasn't that happened?
Well, I would ask the NRA that question. I mean, when
I've asked the NRA that question, and I'm asking the Brady Center that question.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, we would sit down at the table tomorrow with the National Rifle Association or anybody else who wanted to talk about how to make sure dangerous people don't get dangerous weapons. And when the NRA says just enforce the laws on the books, well, there aren't that many. There's the Brady Law and the 1968 Gun Control Act. I mean, we need more laws. They oppose every single common sense law out there and do not want to enter into a discussion about it. It has been tried over and over, and it's pointless and almost fruitless. I mean, that's why we're engaging the American public. We need to engage the people, the vast majority of Americans who feel strongly about this issue when asked about it, and we need to engage them, and we need to sign our petition. That's how we're going to win on this.
One of the things, and I've tried to search for an answer on this, and I have so far been unsuccessful. Maybe you can offer me an explanation as to why, when we passed the assault weapons ban, why was that sunsetted? Why was there a 10-year lifespan put on that little puppy? Do you know?
Well, I wasn't around involved in this movement during that time, but my understanding was that that's not something that folks wanted to put in there in Congress, but felt like because it was such a close vote that was needed.
So that was the way to get it in, and then the idea was that at the end of 10 years we'll revisit it and.
Yeah, with the knowledge that we can come back and, you know, strengthen it if need to, but at least extend it. And, of course, that didn't happen, which is why, you know, the NRA worked their tails off, you know, to make sure it was as weak as possible and put an expiration date on it. You know, they didn't sit down at the table and think, how can we work this through? They're trying to defeat it at every step and every time. So,
and, you know, here's what's interesting, Brian, and, you know, I find this. And I don't mean directly towards you. This is so annoying because talking with the NRA, they have their dogmatic, you know, point of view. They have their rhetoric, and the Brady Center the same. I'm an average guy. I own a weapon. I have a concealed weapons permit. A lot of things I disagree with the NRA. A lot of things that I disagree with the Brady Center, or gun rights. You know, people who are like the Brady Center. But when it comes down to it, I think if we're going to work on behalf of the public at large, we've got to search for those areas where we can reach some agreement and conclusion through negotiation. I think the American public, I think that's what they're looking for. I want to thank you for your time. I wish we had more. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Malte with the Brady Center there. Hang with us. Newsline PM continues.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Thanks for hooking up and hanging with me here on this Tuesday afternoon. I appreciate that a lot. So a lot of clouds around the Dark Knight Rises. Obviously, with what took place last week at the Colorado movie theater. And you know what's funny is that and I don't mean funny, ha-ha, I mean funny, kind of ironic, is that the movie studios, which are usually, you know, clamoring to report, you know, the box office takes and everything of that nature, have been kind of quiet about this. They've just been suppressing it and keeping low, I think, out of respect for the people who were killed and injured in Colorado. And now we find out today, for example, that Christian Bale, who played Batman in that movie, is visiting some of the victims in Colorado today. Brian, the movie guys, joins me. We usually talk about what's being released on DVD, but I guess this week sucks.
Yeah, so, it does. Completely.
Yeah, we're not talking about that. What's your take on, and I'm looking at some of the numbers and what they were anticipating in what the box office receipts would be, and it's you know, about $30 million less than what they were looking for. Is that out of, do you think that people are, you know, put off by the nature of the movie now, or is it concern over going to a theater in terms of security? What do you think's at play here?
I think that number that they were hoping for was way off base. I mean, Avengers at the beginning of this summer did over 200 million in a weekend, but that was a movie you could take kids to. I mean, it was more popcorn, you know, action adventure kind of fun. Women were kind of into that. It wasn't as dark as these Batman movies were, so it just crushed the box office. But I think what they ended up with at 160 million, that's kind of what I thought, you know, in that ballpark between 150 and 175, that it would do. I mean, it's limited because it is such a dark movie, and I would never take my kids to, you know, ages 7 and 5 to something like that. Unfortunately, you know, in Colorado, some did, and so awful things happened. But, you know, I think some people did stay away. I mean, people didn't hop on a plane right after 9/11. And, you know, some people.
I think I get the sense that some of the wind was taken out of the sails. It was like,
yeah,
people have been so struck by the enormity of how horrific this whole thing has become. Mm-hmm. That the interest in the movie kind of just like slipped away.
Yeah,
at some
for the
level.
Time being. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I would say that maybe some people, I mean, it could have done worse, you know. And I feel like some people, I've talked to people that said we weren't planning on going this last weekend, but we went because of what happened. It's like, you know, to kind of stand up against what happened and say, let's go see The Dark Knight. Let's do it. So, I mean, there's those people too that weren't intending to go this weekend because it normally, and it probably was, it still made $160 million, which tells me that theaters were still packed, you know, which is good. I'm glad that people, this is just a random, insane, awful thing that happened. But some people, and I can understand people staying home, but some people were like, yeah, let's just go.
It's the starkness of it. The other thing that I'm curious of, the midnight showing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that seems to be in the crosshairs in the minds of some people as well. That this, if this had been, you know, a 1 o'clock in the afternoon matinee, not likely that the same thing would have happened.
Yeah, not likely. Yeah. This is, you know, this is all studio driven. It's just a chance for them to create this, you know, a movie like this is going to do great opening weekend regardless. But if you can squeeze in a couple more shows by opening the movie at 12:01 on a Friday, you know, that's two or three more shows that you can make money from. And a lot of those people that see those will go see it again. You know, if they see it Thursday or Friday morning, first thing, chances of them going back, chances are they're a huge fan of the series, and chances are they're going to be back, you know, as opposed to if they saw it Saturday or something. So I think that's a thing that was built by the studios that generates an extra $20 million, you know, for the right movie, generates a lot of money for them.
The other thing I was curious of, there are certain movies, and I think, you know, Batman is one of them. I think the Avengers maybe as well. People really get into that genre of movie. They really attach themselves emotionally as well as artistically or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes you will see people, you know, I remember when Star Wars, people would show up dressed as stormtroopers, you know, is that over too?
Boy, it sure sounds like it. I don't know if it's going to be over though. It's Yeah, people, this kind of subject matter, people get really excited about it. And one address is their favorite guy. I could see it being regulated. I don't see them putting guards at every movie theater, you know, but I can see something like this, maybe for midnight showings, maybe you have
no
security.
Yeah.
Maybe at midnight showings you do have security and you do have costumes, and then everything else is back to normal.
All right.
I mean, I don't know.
Brian, the movie guy, by the way, I saw the trailer for the new Superman movie.
What'd you think?
I think it looks kind of cool.
There's two of them. One's voiced by his Russell Crowe, his father on Krypton, and Kevin Costner, his father on Earth.
Well,
it's kind of cool.
It'll be something I look forward to on DVD or Blu-ray.
Of course, it'll pop.
Hang with us. Newsline PM continues.